another episode of the Monday Mile podcast. Today, we're lucky enough to catch up with someone in between appointments in central London who actually raced here in 2012. Yes, I'm talking about the London Olympics. She's a three-time Olympian, known best for her pedigree in long-distance running. She's the daughter of a champion, Liz McColgan. However, in 2022, she officially cemented her own name in the most iconic fashion, pipping the two Kenyans to the post at the Commonwealth Games to claim victory. 32 years after her own mum's victory, breaking her mum's records. Eilish.
How are you?
I'm good, thank you. Yeah, how are you?
I'm good. You're originally from Scotland.
Yes.
However, we've been so lucky today to catch you quite literally in between meetings before you jet off again.
Yes.
What's going down in London?
Yeah, it's literally just a bit of a stopover. I came over from, I had the whole week in Paris for a very exciting ASICS event. Some photo shoots, I had my first sort of pacing race back again after a year out. And yeah, we go off to Denver tomorrow morning. So direct flight from London, a little bit of a stopover. We're lucky we could align our schedules once and for all.
Finally, we're actually back in the country. So you just in Paris, is it surreal being there so close to the games? Does it give you that little itch of excitement?
Yeah, definitely. Like there was a sort of, like, don't dream too much, like, because there is a real buzz about the city. There's so many posters up, like, even some of the monuments alongside the river are all Olympic themed. Like, everyone's aware that the Olympics is coming. So, yeah, I was trying not to put too much pressure on it. Obviously, I've still not qualified just yet. I have my qualifying times, but we won't find out until the 1st of July if we've actually made it or not. So,
1st of July?
Yeah, it's
that is tight. The game starts 2.5 weeks after that.
I think it's about a month after that. So it's still very tight, yes. I think that's why it was nice, obviously, to be in Paris and be around that excitement. But yeah, I tried not to think about it too much. I don't want to jinx myself. So yeah, it was really cool to be in the city.
It's quite a surreal one when it comes to managing that sort of expectation and pressure that you can put on yourself so close to a Games. How do you manage to remove yourself when you're in a situation like that and actually in the city itself that's hosting the Games?
Yeah, it's difficult. I think there's obviously going to be there's always going to be an added pressure when it's an Olympic year, because I suppose the general public, they that's all they see. You know, they see the Olympics once every 4 years and think that you go into hiding in between that. But for us, there's always a championship. You know, there's always something to be aiming for. And I think that probably helps when you're in that mindset of being a runner. You're always just aiming for the next event, the next race. So for me, I was, yeah, trying not to think about it too much until I know I've 100% qualified. So for now, it really is just like training is the focus. And hopefully, that'll help when we go to Colorado tomorrow. It'll just, you're away from it a little bit on a training camp, away from all the buzz and excitement.
So talk to me about the process of actually qualifying for the Olympic Games, because I know for every sport it's very, very different. So what do you actually have to do and what's the process?
Yeah, so for us, we have to run a qualifying time which is set by the World Athletics.
Yeah,
I was fortunate enough, I got my qualifying time last year, so that actually still counts for this year.
That's incredible.
But every federation decides differently as to how they pick their athletes, which can be a little bit confusing. But for the British Federation, essentially you have to run a qualifying time and then you have to place top two at your national trials.
And what is that qualifying time?
So the qualifying time this year for the 10,000 is 30 minutes and 40 seconds.
30 minutes.
Yeah, which
that
actually
is just ridiculous. What is that per minute mile for those marathon runners that maybe connect to it?
I don't even know what it is minute mile. I've not even done the calculations myself. I just know on the track for me, I'm having to run, obviously my PB is 30 minutes flat, so
right.
3 minute Ks, 72 second laps, that's the sort of pace that I'm channeled into when I'm on the track. I'm 40 seconds under it, which is obviously a very good place to be.
Yeah.
There's myself and there's actually another young Scottish girl, Megan Keith, who's
go on, Scotland.
Up and coming. She just sneaked under it as well. So it's pretty cool to have two of us, two Scots, completely different ages. She's like starting her career and I'm coming towards the end of mine, but it's pretty cool that we're the only two qualified at the moment. So in a strong position, but I have to show, obviously I've been injured since then, so I have an added little thing on, in order for me to qualify, I need to show fitness and form. So to show that I am I don't have to be breaking records or setting PBs or anything, but I need to be shown that I'm getting back to that. Yeah, I'm getting back to that level of performance again.
And ready to attack. We'll come back to the injuries, but first of all, I want to delve into representing Scotland at the Commonwealth Games in 2022. That iconic moment. Take me to lap number 23.
Yeah, it was a pretty incredible experience. I think having, not only having the Commonwealth Games in the UK, but the fact that like my mum was there, my dad was there, my partner Michael, it's very rare like they come and watch me compete. I think it's probably the first race I've actually had them all there watching. So
did that add a pressure having your mum and Michael there?
Yeah, possibly. I was a little bit more nervous than I typically would be, but I like to use that nervous feeling and like it means something to me. Like when I stand on the line and I'm not nervous, it means that that race maybe isn't as important as it should be. So for me, it's like I like using that feeling of like, oh, I want to do well here, I want to make my family proud. So for me, it gave me a little bit of an extra boost, to be honest, knowing that they were in the stand. But I've never experienced a noise like that in the stadium. Like I've seen Birmingham Alexander Stadium, I've trained there as a kid. We've had British Championships there when I was under 13.
I even ran there when I was about 12 in 100 metres.
Yeah, that's we had the British champs there every year for donkeys. So the fact that it was now this big, like, incredible Commonwealth Games stadium, it was a different world entirely. I've never experienced a race quite like that. It really was something special.
Can you unpack it for us slightly? So you've got 10,000 metres, 25 laps, yeah. And you know the Kenyans are going to be on your tail. At that moment, when you get overtaken, where do you find the inner grit and how do you turn it around to push through?
I think for me, I had done a lot of the work to that point. You know, I had pushed on the pace, I had taken on a lot of the earlier laps. And so by the time I got to the later laps, I almost felt like, not now, like this is not happening now. Like I've done all the work. I've not come here to then come away with a fourth or fifth place. I was I have to win a medal here today. And to be honest, it wasn't really until I got into the last lap that I thought, my God, I'm here. I've got one more lap. That's it. Like I've done all the work. I mean, the hard work's done to this point. Now I have to win it. And it was weird, the mindset shift of I'd be happy with a medal. A couple of laps to go, I was like, oh, medal would be great. That'd be amazing. And then going into that last lap, the mindset shifted to I'm winning gold, like this is what I want. And so it was a really weird dynamic.
What do you think
dynamic.
It was that shifted that?
Probably just the fact that you're there and you're within like touching distance. Do you know what I mean? If you're that close, you've only got one 400 meter left, you think, oh my God, like this is it. Like I'm here, still here, still going. The crowd as well was just getting, I can't explain the noise, like especially the last 200, I had like a buzz just going through my hands, like a noise vibration going through my body. It was just insane, absolutely insane. And I felt like, yeah, I just wanted it. I wanted it in that moment just to make my family proud, but also everybody in the stadium that was cheering us on as well.
And in that moment, you're running around, you've got the last 100 meters in sight. Are you aware of what's going on around you? Could you see your mum? Could you see Michael?
No, not at all.
Totally.
Absolutely.
Your own.
Yeah, it's like, it's complete blur. It's just, you don't even feel like, I can't explain it. Yeah, you just have this weird, as I said, a sensation like going through my arms and my body, and I'm tired, but I'm still moving. Like I'm just, I don't know how I'm still moving
the
forward.
The cogs are still
but
turning.
It's just, I suppose you do it so often in training that you get into that sort of zone when you're on your own. So when you're then in a competitive environment, you get that extra little bit of a boost, and that excitement and adrenaline all kicks in with the noise of the crowd. Like it was just insane. But I had no idea of anybody in the stands or where my mum was, where my dad was. It wasn't until after the race, like when I crossed the line, I actually heard one of my good friends, Jenny, she was also on the team. We trained together as kids and she had made her first Commonwealth. So I heard her scream my name. I turned around and like she was crying. My mum was standing next to her, she was crying. So I just ran over. I was meant to do interviews and I just ignored them and jumped over the barrier to go and give my mum and Jenny a hug. And then, on the lap pull down, I saw my dad, I saw Michael. It was weird. I just, out of all those like thousands of people, I was able to pick their voices or their faces out of the crowd, which was such a surreal moment, but really special for me.
That's so, so magic. And in that, you claim the new record.
Yeah.
Beat your mum's title. I can imagine your mum was so chuffed, because that kind of work doesn't just happen overnight. To be successful in long distance running takes time.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, the time was completely irrelevant. Like, I had no idea I'd broke the record. I was just like over the moon to have won the race, to have won gold and to win my first medal for Scotland. Like, that's all I could think about. And then it was sort of, I don't know, a couple of minutes later, I thought, shit, yeah, my mum's done this as well. Like, this is mad. Like, my mum's done this exact same race in the UK as well, with her mum and dad sitting watching the stands. Like, it was like this surreal moment where I felt like I was like living in a completely different planet. And then it wasn't until then, maybe so many minutes after that, and then I thought, oh my God, I've also broke the record. So it was like, it came in like waves of realization. And yeah, it didn't sink in for a long, long time. I think I was just so excited to see my family and to share that moment with them. The same moment that my mum had, but like 32 years later.
So magic. Do you feel a pressure or an expectation running under your mum's name?
No, I never have. Like, everyone else expects that I should have that pressure because of the name and because of, I suppose, the legacy of sport that she's been, but I've never felt that. Like, always journalists and media have always said, like, do you feel pressure? But it's never come from my family, and it's like never come from me.
If it was me, I would just feel an inspiration and pride.
Yeah, I'm really proud to be the daughter of both my mum and dad. Even my dad was a professional athlete as well. And so I just know how hard they work to achieve their goals, and particularly my mum going on to become a world champion less than a year after giving birth to me. Is like, that still blows my mind. Like, now as an adult myself, I mean, I can barely look after myself, never mind having a kid less than a year old and then still going to the world championships in Tokyo as well. So all the long haul travel, you've just given birth, you've got a baby that's knocking about, and yet you still are the best in the world. I mean, it's insane.
Unreal,
so
isn't it?
I just have a huge respect, I think, for my mum. So I've never felt pressured, because to be honest, I never felt like I would really ever emulate that level of success within the sport. I just took up running because I liked it. It was a hobby. It was something that I enjoyed doing. I didn't really think too much about the elite side of it. So I never had that sort of pressure. I never felt that pressure.
Talking about the emulation of a feeling, with experience, obviously, you've now been in that situation where you have surpassed what you maybe thought was possible. So if we were to take that experience at the Commonwealth Games and transfer it to Paris, has it given you an inner confidence when looking ahead at future events in your career?
Yeah, I'd say confidence is definitely something I've always struggled with. Maybe that does come from my parents being elite athletes and just feeling like you might not quite achieve what they have done. I don't know if that's where that stems from, but I've never really truly believed that running could be like a job for me. So the fact then to go to the Commonwealth Games and obviously win there, but now also be looking at qualifying for my fourth Olympics.
That's, I mean, it's nuts. Just, yeah, four just Olympic cycles.
It's,
that's a really, really long time. I did two, and I was cool with that.
I still can't really put into words how bizarre that is, because it's still very weird to me. I don't know how I've done it.
You're incredibly humble.
I'm still here. But it's something that I'm proud of. I am proud of it. When I'm sure, like, when I'm my mom's age and I look back and I have kids and think, wow, yeah, I'm proud of that. But right now, I think you're just in it. You just want to make it happen. I just want to not think about it too much, not put too much pressure on myself. If I make it, amazing. If I don't, then at least I can go to sleep at night knowing that, like, I tried. I absolutely tried to make it. Obviously, last year has been a really difficult year for me with injury and even family loss. And it's, yeah, it's not been straightforward. So I've got all of that to contend with. And I think that would probably make it, yeah, even sweeter if I was to make my fourth Olympics. I'm not putting any sort of goals on when I get there. To be honest, the biggest challenge for me now is just getting there, getting to that start line.
Do you still love it?
Yeah, I do. I think definitely there's waves where you think, do you still have that sort of drive when you're younger? But then I'll see it in training and go, no, I do. I still have that drive to get up and be successful and still enjoy this day to day. And I'm just in a really fortunate position. Like, I get to travel the world and I get to do it with my partner, Michael. And it's like, I'm so lucky I can do that with my best friend with me every single day. Like, he's out on the bike with me. whether it's pissing down rain, it's cold, it's wet, it's snowing, he's by my side. And so I don't feel like I'm having to like take it all on my own. I think maybe before the pandemic, when I was having to spend 3-4 weeks totally solo in a training camp, that was when it was like, is this worth it? Do you know what I mean? Is this fun anymore?
Michael couldn't come on those camps back then?
No, in the past, we didn't really have the, I suppose, financially, I couldn't afford to do that. So yeah. I was almost investing in myself. Now I'm in a position, a really fortunate position, where I can take Michael with me now. So essentially, my mum is still my coach, but Michael's the one there day to day doing a lot of my coaching.
And that's got to be incredible to be able to bring a piece of home with you, because I know myself and speaking to many athletes, one of the hardest things is to actually leave home behind and leave a somewhat normal life. But I can imagine having Michael there, does it make you feel like you're at home?
It honestly does. Yeah, I think for me, that's the biggest thing. Like I feel wherever we are, like we travel 11 months of the year. We worked out since the pandemic, we'd spent, I think it was like a month a year across the whole year, actually physically at home in the UK. We'd been traveling that much because altitude training is such a huge thing for me as an endurance athlete. If you want to compete against the best Kenyan, Ethiopian athletes who are born and living at altitude, you have to be there as much as you possibly can. So for us, we travel from, literally it worked out about 11 months. And I used to miss home. I used to feel like I was missing everything happening at home, my family, but now with Michael being with me, I feel like, the home is like wherever we are together. I don't know, I don't miss it as much. I feel like there's a purpose there and I'm doing it for me, I'm doing it for him, I'm doing it for my family. Like, they just understand that and he completely gets it too, having been an athlete himself.
Is that in any way suffocating when it comes to your relationship? Does it add a pressure, the fact that he is there every day as sort of travel agent, logistics man,
physio,
chef.
He literally does everything.
All of the things. Where is he? I'm surprised.
He's in a coffee shop just next door. But
he should have bought him on the mile.
He's not.
He could have been the timekeeper.
He's not a social media friendly individual. He's definitely not keen on interviews and cameras. He likes to keep low key. No, honestly, people find it bizarre that we spend, like, we literally spend every second of every single day together. So
that's so
people
cool.
Find it weird and bizarre, but we, I don't know, it just works. Like, as I said, he literally is my best friend. He understands everything about sport. He understands everything about me. My family love him. It's just so easy. It doesn't feel intense. Like a lot of athletes find when they're training hard or they're away on training camps, it's super intense, or they have to sacrifice this and that. And I feel like we don't have that. He keeps everything really chilled out and laid back. Like, we're opposites in that sense. If I didn't have him there, I'd be like training myself into the ground. I'd just be every day wanting to do more and more and more. Whereas he's the sensible one to say, no, let's take a day off. Let's cut this down. Don't be just battering on when you're sick or when you're ill or when you're injured. So it's having someone there that's like an external voice makes a big difference.
That's so, so special. How incredible that you can travel the world with your best friend and have him there through every step of the process. So when it comes to training, high altitude camp, you're heading off to Denver tomorrow.
Yes.
What does a camp like that look like for someone who's trying to qualify for the Olympics?
So for me, this is essentially a get fit camp. Yeah.
So what does a get fit camp look like for Ailish? Because I can imagine that's very different to what it looks like for Joe Bloggs.
So I've been back training now for about 5 weeks, proper training. Twice a week on the track, so getting hard intervals in. Altitude is just a different ball game. It really is. It's the first 2 weeks will be really, really tough. You have to run a lot slower. Your heart rate is just naturally higher because of the higher elevation. So for me, it's the first 2 weeks will be adapting and getting used to training, but I'm training most days twice a day, usually about an hour run in the morning, and then in the evening I might go on a spin bike or a cross trainer. The things I hate, aqua jogging maybe sometimes.
Aqua jogging.
Yeah, so just alternative training so that I'm not running twice a day as I build up my training. Twice
a
week.
And is that to work on your heart rate? Or what is the point in that second training session?
Just purely for extra cardio, yeah. So I have, obviously coming back from an injury, I have to make sure my overall volume isn't too much. So at the moment I'm running around 50 mile a week. The goal when I'm out there will be to try and maybe add on an extra 10, 15 by the end of that that training camp. So if I could get back up to like 65, that would be a really good place for me to again continue to build on. It's still a long way off probably my competitors who are maybe around 90 to 100, but yeah, I have to be realistic of what I've came from this last year with the hamstring injury and knee injury. So yeah, it'll be a tough camp. Twice a week will be my two really hard training sessions down on the track. Sometimes we'll do those on the road, but with me now preparing for the track season, it's pretty important I get back on track and try and nail some of those really hard 5K, 10K sessions. And I have one day off every week where I do nothing. I just sit around. I do my emails, I do my admin, I do invoices, I do everything else that I suppose a normal human being should do. And I pretty much do it on that one day. And the rest of the time, it's like full-time training, running.
Training, running,
focus,
eating, sleeping.
Eat, sleep, repeat.
So a question for the general runners out there. You're prepping for a race. Does your diet change much in the lead up to it? Let's talk half marathon because people will be able to connect to that.
Honestly, not at all, no. I eat pretty much the same all year round, other than obviously when I'm on my two-week holiday. But yeah, most of the time, morning would always be porridge, very Scottish. I pretty much take those little sachets with me all around the world, because when you're at a competition and a race, depending on different countries, you know, the breakfast.
You can't trust it.
Yeah, so I just take my own all the time.
Bring them as well. Always in my snowboard bag.
It's so good. But yeah, some food is just, I don't follow a strict diet and never have done. And to be honest, I don't ever really want to. I don't want to get into that intense phase. I see athletes do it all the time and they lose the like enjoyment of their sport because they're like...
so linear.
Yeah, and they can't go out for a meal with their partner because they're like, oh no, I can't eat this. Like, I'm very fortunate that I do a distance event. I mean, I'm obviously not the biggest of people anyway. So for me, it's making sure that I'm fueling enough rather than worrying about cutting anything out.
That's really, really refreshing to hear because you do... hear of a lot of athletes having to be extremely strict, especially in the fighting sports where there's making
weight. I appreciate obviously when people have to make weight.
It's a bit different,
isn't it? Yeah, and even in athletics, I mean, you have events where maybe the sprinters are certainly not running the same amount of distance as we are, but for me it really isn't about restricting in any way whatsoever.
Do you have a go-to sort of meal that you'd like to eat the night before a big race, or are you again
I try not to do it too much because again when you go to different competitions you don't want to be stuck thinking, oh, but usually I have chicken and rice, and you go to a race and there's only beef and pasta, and then you start panicking because you're like, so for me I'm really flexible with what I would eat, but typically I'd say at most running events it is very much like grilled chicken, some sort of beef or pasta, rice. Like, do you know what I mean? It's the same sort of food you get fed in most events. Yeah. So I am pretty flexible. I don't restrict and I don't think about it too much, to be honest.
You have had a really rough run with injuries. How are the injuries today?
Yeah, it's good. I've been back 5 weeks now. So I feel like I'm every day getting a little bit better. I actually just did a 12-mile run around Hyde Park before I joined
miles.
You, yeah.
Amazing.
So that was my longest run really since the injury, which is good. I just have to be very careful with how I gradually build it up. It started off with a torn hamstring at the Berlin half and then went into a knee injury, and it was my own fault really because I was desperate to run London Marathon and this happened just 2 weeks before London, so I shouldn't really have been trying to train on a torn hamstring, but I was desperate to try and just make it to the start line, and I pushed and then ultimately it was actually my knee that ended up causing the problems. And just from April,
hamstrings are a nightmare.
April right the way around till literally now.
Wow. How do you deal with that, because that's a really tricky situation to be in for any athlete, nearly a year out not being able to perform at your best?
Yeah, it's frustrating when running is your thing to like clear your mind as well, you know, like as a kid for me it was if I was doing exams or like something's going on with family or relationship, whatever it was, I mean running for me was like a way to just clear my mind and go outside, and it's still like that now. Like I get a boost going outside and just being in fresh air. So when you're on a spin bike or you're just sitting, you're indoors on a cross trainer, it's it's not the same. You know, I don't enjoy it the same way. I hate cycling. I absolutely hate it. I don't know how people do cycling, but for me,
let's not sign you up for any speed classes. Definitely not.
Or swimming for me is even worse. So it's
swimming's hard, isn't it?
Doing other stuff that you don't enjoy. You just think, God, I just want to get back to doing what I'm doing. But for me, I think having those high moments, it probably helped that I did come off the back of the Commonwealth Games. I thought, well, I've only just done that. Like, it wasn't that long ago, so I'll be able to get myself back to that again. You almost sort of have this little dream and little glimmer in your mind that you can keep looking back to and think, well, yeah,
I've done it before.
I can get back again. So to be honest, that's really all I've held on to the last year. I just think,
and rightly
so, at some point you'll get to like the end of this sort of tunnel and think, right, yeah, this is it. I can see the progress again. I can see that it's starting to turn around.
Do you believe things happen for a reason? Because even just hearing you say that about that tunnel, maybe that's your journey to appreciating the success at the end of this rough run even more so.
I think you're totally right. Like last 2022, the Commonwealth year was probably my most successful year, winning the Commonwealth, but winning two medals at Europeans as well. And I just probably didn't really give myself a chance to actually like let that sink in. I just went from commies straight to Europeans, and then straight to the next race. And then I came out last year all guns blazing. I broke the 10k British record, the half marathon British record. I never gave myself a chance to actually really think about or slow down a little bit. I was just like, oh, keep going, 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 going. And I got into this momentum. So yeah, it's given me a bit of a, yeah, maybe a bit of a time to relax again and switch, or not switch off, but like, yeah, maybe just reset my goals and think, right, okay, this is definitely what you want to do. Like, don't get too carried away, and let's focus now on firstly making Paris, but then what comes after Paris. I think Paris for me also would be a huge achievement to make it to, but I do think that my sort of future lies in the marathon. Still not done one yet, and I keep speaking about it, but I do think that when it happens, it'll be worth it. Like, it'll be worth all of that hardship and all of the struggles to get to that point, because I do think that things just happen for a reason, for that one moment.
I also believe there's a real power in speaking about it. Often people say, don't speak about something until it's happened, but by putting it out there, you've got the power to work towards it. It might add a pressure or a weight, but actually it's only really you that is putting that true pressure on yourself.
I think pressure has always come from, I think a lot of athletes are like that, like you put the pressure on yourself. Because ultimately it's you that's got to make the decision to train the way you do, to make the sacrifices you need to make in order to be successful. But for me, I always have to keep it in my mind as that's my main goal. And for me, if I keep thinking it enough, eventually it like sinks in. It's those small little things. Like I remember when I'm coming back from surgery in 2015, I remember writing on a bit of paper and sticking it to my wall in the living room. And it was the qualifying times for the Olympic Games. And it was an event I'd never done before. It was the 5K and the 10K qualifying times. And I used to be a steeplechaser. So I'd never dreamt about doing these events before, but I put it up and I just was like, I'm going to do them. You just keep visualizing it and thinking about it. You've got a better chance than if you don't.
If there was a decisive moment to hang up the track spikes or the road running shoes, do you know what it would look like?
Yeah, I've thought about this before. Like, I don't actually know what it would look like performance wise. There's obviously like time goals I'd love to achieve, like breaking 30 minutes for a 10K is a huge barrier. I've run 30 flat, so like to just see a 29 in the front would be amazing.
That's just literally like that. It's like that.
So there's small things like that that obviously would be amazing, but I suppose I'd like to have maybe a couple more European. I've only ever won a silver or bronze at European, so to win a European title would be amazing. And ultimately, I suppose everyone wants to win a world or Olympic medal. That for me would be the ultimate goal. But if I don't achieve that, like, I'm still really proud of everything that I've done on and off the track as well. I'd like to continue. I coach athletes all around the world. I'd like to continue doing that with Michael. We have our own little business. I have my own little charity up in Scotland for like free after school clubs for kids and supporting young female athletes with scholarships. So again, I'd like to, for me, moving away from the track, like that will be more of my focus. But I'm still really proud of, if I don't quite hit those like A goals performance wise, like I'm not going to be someone that feels like, oh, what a waste. So, you know, I don't want to put all of my worth and all
based on one thing.
Yeah, because I think a lot of athletes do that. You know, if they don't win Olympic gold, then they're depressed because they've not managed. They've sort of sacrificed their whole life. I don't want to feel like I've sacrificed anything.
And you can't allow one day to define you, because essentially that's all it is.
Yes,
it's one day.
Exactly that.
I would never want to be defined by that either. And I think that's such a beautiful attitude to have. And I don't think many athletes do have that. Ailish, we like to ask all of our guests on the Monday Mile podcast what their relationship is like with Monday. Do you like a Monday?
Do you know what? Monday actually changes for me every week. So I'm not on a normal like training cycle. I don't mind a Monday, to be honest. It depends what day of the week. Today was long run day. Sometimes Monday can be a rest day. So yeah, I'm pretty happy with a Monday.
And lastly, do you have any life mottos or quotes that you can share with our listeners inspire them to get out of bed and tackle their running dreams?
Oof, that's a very good question. I don't have a clue. I don't really have any like quotes or mottos that I use. I'm not a very quotey person, but I'd say for people that are taking up running for the first time, to just focus on themselves. Don't get carried away by what you see on Instagram and Strava and all the apps. Like, run your own pace, run your own race, focus on you. Because one of the best things about running is that everyone has their own personal best. Like, it doesn't matter if you're first, you're last, like, you have your own PB to try and focus on and break. So yeah, that's why I'd say.
Are we ready? Go on, press the button.
Let's I get going.
How will you recover from your 12 miles you've done today?
We're actually going to go out for tea, so we're going to go to a show tonight.
Nice!
Les Miserables. I've not seen it before.
I've heard it's amazing.
And then,
We're running. We're running.
And then...
I'm running. I'm officially running.
And then, we're going out for tea, so it'll be very nice.
Amazing. Where are you going for tea?
I think Michael...
I love that you call it tea.
Yeah, I actually wanted to go to one of my favourite restaurants is Hakkasan. I absolutely love it. Like,
yeah,
I'm obsessed with it. But it's shut tonight on Monday.
No.
So Michael has booked, I think it was called like Lobster and Burger or Burger,
oh,
and,
burger and Lobster.
Yeah, I have no idea what that's like. But anyway, I'll give it a go.
I'm sure it sounds good.
It's near the show. So we'll see how it goes. It had 7,500 reviews. And they were all very good.
I've heard of it.
Michael's very picky on his restaurant choices, so he must have scouted that out.
So you're in good hands.
Yeah, supposedly. We'll see.
Ailish, thank you so much for joining us here on the Monday Mile Walk and Talk podcast. Really appreciate you joining us, especially after a 12-mile run, in between meetings, before you fly to Denver. Monday Mile listeners, it is a wrap. Do make sure you stay tuned and follow Ailish's journey, because I'll tell you what, it's been one hell of a ride, and I'm excited to see what's up next, because it's ever evolving. Monday Mile listeners, you know what to do. Make sure you subscribe, give us a little like, and check us out on YouTube. The audio will be dropping at 12 a.m. every single Monday morning. Monday Mile listeners, it's a wrap! We'll be right back.